The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Can you help me, please? I've had a problem with my health for years and I can't get to the bottom of it. The doctors have run out of ideas.
I'd love to help. My name is Kevin Davis. Our bioresonance system starts with an automated full body scan. It's simply the quickest way to shine a light on what's going on inside, with treatments during the same session.
Right, can you book me in, please?
For the latest health tech at the best price, visit biohealthtech.co.uk today and make us your first choice for a healthier you.
If only I'd found out about you sooner, it would have made so much difference.
Hello and welcome to the first Yes to Life show of 2019. I'm Robin Daly, your regular host for the show, and the founder of the UK charity Yes to Life that helps people with cancer to access the many benefits of integrative medicine. I'm looking forward to introducing you to many fascinating guests during the coming year, people who are pushing the boundaries of treatment for cancer in a host of different ways. My guest today is no exception. Kirsten Chick has been on the show before, and her expert opinions and perspectives on nutrition and allied topics is always welcome. Today, I'm talking to her over Skype at her home in Brighton about detoxification. Hi and Happy New Year to you, Kirsten.
Happy New Year, Robin.
Lovely to have you back on the Yes to Life show. This is our very first for 2019.
Well, hey, thanks for having me back.
So, the subject matter I'm wanting to explore today is detoxing. And I do want to start from the immediate matter of maybe needing to clean up after the Christmas excesses, but I also want to go much further than that, as I think you'll agree, detoxing is a very important subject for anyone with cancer or any other chronic disease for that matter.
Yes, there's only so much toxicity the human body has evolved to deal with, and we seem to be overloading our bodies with an awful lot more these days. So it's good to give those natural processes as much support as we can.
Right. Okay, but let's start with the seasonal issue. Christmas typically means plenty of rich and sweet foods or washed down with a good dose of alcohol. What are your tips for regaining a bit of balance as quickly as possible as we head into the new year?
Okay, well, my top tip actually is to be really gentle about it. It's really tempting to swing from one direction into an extreme in the other direction, and that may be just as stressful. I want to just put in a little note here that all the advice I'm giving today is really general guidelines, okay. Because we're all very unique, we're all very individual, and each of us has a body that prefers to do things in a slightly different way. So for some people out there, an extreme detox right now might be just the ticket. But for most people, I would say a gentle approach is much more sensible. So gently easing off the sugar and richer foods and gently introducing more vegetables. If you feel you want to do a bit of vegetable juicing, go for it, but not. I wouldn't necessarily say do a juice fast at this time of year. I'd say maybe introduce some juices and broths to add some minerals and some nourishment that's going to really help your liver. And simplify diets a little bit more. But in this climate, so in this hemisphere at this time of year, doing lots of cold raw might not be the best thing. It might be better to look more for soups, broths, simplified warming foods and so on, and gently ease your way towards spring. Maybe go for it a bit more in the springtime.
Right. Okay. All sounds very sensible. So moving on now to the wider issue of chronic disease and detoxing. A good balanced diet, whatever that is the only recommendation most cancer patients are likely to have had from their hospital team as the answer to any questions regarding nutrition or detoxification. But
thankfully, less and less people are satisfied with that, and they're increasingly taking matters into their own hands. So just how important do you think detoxification is for people with cancer?
I think it's really crucial. As I said before, I think one of the main issues that we're facing these days is a hugely toxic environment, and we can do a little bit about that, but we can't do a massive amount about that. So we can be aware of the additional toxins that we're putting into our own environment and into our own bodies. But by and large, the planet is a lot more polluted than it seems to have ever been before. And whilst our bodies have processes of dealing with that, there's only so much that they can really cope with. The main organ that is at the central hub of our body's detoxification process is the liver. And the liver has so many other jobs to do as well, and it needs a lot of energy and resources to do all of those. For example, all the food that you eat, it processes and helps to decide what to do with. Some of the nutrients from the food you eat, it decides to store. As a result of some of this work, it actually controls how much sugar is in your blood, how much fat, how many amino acids. It's doing all of this, it's storing things. It's also making enzymes and other proteins and all sorts of things are going on in the liver alongside its role of detoxification. It's an incredible organ. It's worthy of a huge amount of respect. But the traditional view that you don't have to worry about detoxing, your liver just does it all naturally, I think is a little bit naive. I think we're asking our livers to do too much at the moment. So, and we're not necessarily providing enough of the nutrients that it needs to do its job. So that's where I would start with detoxification.
Okay. So toxins, they come in all shapes and sizes, and due to the world we now live in, they lurk in most corners of our lives. So I want to take a look at as many of the significant ways that we're exposed as possible during the show. But thanks to David Attenborough, plastics are the big news at the moment. So I thought we could start there. Of course, it's not really news, as the dangers of plastic have been known for decades, but it's certainly become a major crisis now. Can you explain what it is about plastics that are a threat and what we can do to minimise that?
There are many aspects about plastics, some of which we probably still don't even understand about how they can detrimentally affect our bodies. One of the aspects that I'm interested in is their estrogen mimicking compounds. So estrogen mimicking compounds do exactly as they are described. They have a very similar effect on the bodily tissues as estrogen. And estrogen's role in the body is really to create inflammation and cell proliferation. It peaks just before a woman's period, for example, to create extra wound tissue and to create inflammation in that area. In preparation for a potential pregnancy, and then it wants to calm down again. If you've got high levels of the stronger forms of estrogen added to lots of estrogen mimicking chemicals in your body, then that's going to increase the likelihood that your body's switched on more of the time to creating inflammation and cell proliferation. What I mean by cell proliferation is that when your cells divide, the old ones don't die. We just create more and more and more cells. And that's exactly what happens with tumour cells. That's how tumours grow. So new cells are created. And this is true of benign tumours as well as cancerous tumours. So the cells keep multiplying. Very few of any die off, so you end up with a growth. And estrogen mimickers are just as likely to stimulate that. So our liver can do a great job of helping to break those down if it's got enough energy, resources, time, so on. But if not, we will deposit them in areas around the body. Estrogen mimickers are fat soluble, So we will look for fatty parts of the body to store them in. And we have an awful lot of those in areas around the uterus, the breasts and so on, those key areas where estrogen receptive tumours are often found. So in terms of cancer, but also in terms of fertility generally, that's something that is of a real concern with plastics in the environment. So yes, Robin, it's brilliant news that more people are looking, and even governments now are looking to bring in more policies around reducing single-use plastic and reducing plastic use generally.
Okay, so in terms of strategies, particular things to avoid in the way of plastics, you've got any tips there?
Yeah, well, a lot of food is plastic wrapped, unfortunately, and I find if I go to supermarkets, and I generally try and buy organic food where I can. Organic food isn't necessarily completely chemical free, but it's a lot lower in the kind of pesticides and other chemicals, which are also estrogen mimicking and can contribute to cancer as well. That's why I like to shop organic. If I do that in the supermarket, although supermarkets now have ranges of vegetables, and some always have had, where you can just select your vegetables and choose not to have a plastic bag, that still doesn't seem to be the case for most organic food in supermarkets. No. I actually get my vegetables from a box scheme. They still use some plastics for some things, but they're more biodegradable plastics, and they choose paper and cardboard and other packaging where they can. There's still a lot that can be done, but those are the kind of options you can look for. Most people have access to some kind of a vegetable box scheme. A lot of my local health food shops now are going back to the traditional methods of selling things from containers where you can buy by the pound or by the kilo or whatever and bring your own packaging. So those are all things that we can do in terms of buying food. And also increasingly in terms of buying things like washing up liquid and laundry liquid and shower gels and things like that, the ones with the purest ingredients are the ones that you can generally get from health food shops, and more of those are selling refills as well, so you can just keep topping up your containers rather than buying new plastic every time. So there's lots of different ways that you can think of, and even things like using the beeswax, and now there's the vegan version, cloth soaked in beeswax and or the vegan alternative instead of cling film as well, and using glass containers instead of plastic containers. So there's really a lot that we can look at, and it's going back to traditional methods of doing things. We don't have to reinvent very much at all to do this.
Right. Okay. So you've naturally segued into the next piece I wanted to talk about, which is about food. So this is obviously one of the most direct ways we can take in toxins. More generally, we've talked about the packaging side of it, and you've also mentioned organic, but that's clearly something you'd recommend people, is to buy organic when they can. Are there any other recommendations for things to do when you're shopping for food that are likely to reduce your load of toxins?
Ways probably to think more about cooking from scratch rather than buying processed foods, because that way you know exactly what's gone in there. There are no hidden additives or even unhidden additives that are actually detailed on the label that you don't necessarily want to put in your body. You know exactly what the proportions of things are. You can get the flavour exactly how you want it. It's not as difficult as a lot of people imagine. You can cook very simply from scratch, make really delicious meals very quickly and easily. You can batch cook so that you're not necessarily having to cook from scratch every day, although I quite like to cook from scratch every day. It's my downtime, if you like. It's my little bit of In fact, a lot of people describe how when they finish work at the end of the day, they like to have a glass of wine as a transition between work and relaxing in the evening. For me, it's throwing dinner together. It's spending that kind of half an hour or so in the kitchen, just putting a really nice meal together. It's my transition time.
Right.
So that's a really good tip, is just cooking from scratch. If you are buying any kind of sauces or processed foods or ready-made foods, really read the ingredients with a, you know, really go through them with a fine-tooth comb, because it's surprising what gets added to food sometimes. And actually, you can find alternatives out there now if you are in a hurry and you just want to pick something up quickly that do have very simple ingredients. So do take an extra few seconds to just read those labels.
And what about drinking? Everything from water onwards. I mean, you know, clearly water is a very important substance to us.
Water's a huge minefield of a topic. In my ideal world, I live at the top of a glacial, of a mountain with pure streams, and the water's been eddying amongst these beautiful mineralising rocks and oxygenating itself around those rocks as it comes down the mountain and into my glass. That's my ideal.
Okay.
I don't think I'm ever going to get that. I try for the nearest approximation that I can. And in some instances, if I'm out and about, or if I'm staying at somebody else's house with family, for example, that's, you know, my best alternative is tap water. And I would rather stay hydrated with tap water than dehydrate myself.
Right.
However, if I have a better option, then I will always go for the cleaner option. At home, I have a kit. It's a reverse osmosis, which takes everything out of the water, including the estrogen mimickers that I was talking about before. What you're left with is pretty empty water, which is it is debatable about actually how healthy that is to drink. But mine is fortunately remineralized and then reoxygenated. So it's the closest approximation that I have found to that mountain stream water.
Right.
But you can get filters that do all sorts of things with all sorts of bells and whistles on. And you can get some very simple jug filters that maybe don't do a lot, but they're still better than doing nothing at all.
Right.
So I think, And mineral water that you buy, you know, some of it is clearly really good quality, and it's in glass bottles and so on. A lot of it, there's been a lot of controversy around how some of it's actually tap water that's just been put into a plastic bottle, and which leaches again these estrogen mimicking chemicals. So they're not always a better option, but sometimes they really are. So it's really a case of just doing the best you can in the situation you are in the current moment with the budget and resources that you have, I think is my best answer to that.
Fair enough. And you were mentioning the estrogen mimicking chemicals in the tap water. They've got there presumably through a mixture of plastic and things like contraceptive pills and things. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, contraceptive pill, HRT, all sorts of things. And they don't get filtered out by all of the filters in the world. And they certainly don't get filtered out by your local water authority.
No.
So that's something that I'm quite aware of, and I really wanted when I got my water filter.
Right. Okay, and what about special concerns maybe around dairy, fish and meat?
Yeah, again, I think it's really, a lot of it comes down to sourcing. So, it's a tricky one, because I don't think there has been enough research, or certainly not that I've seen, done on the difference between organic, pasture-fed, etc., and standard farmed dairy, meat, fish, and so on. I'd like to see a lot more comparisons done between the two. And I can't imagine that there is a perfect answer to any of this. No. I know there's a huge trend towards going vegan for health and also ethical reasons. I still think that there are arguments for including small amounts of animal produce in the diet for some people. And I suspect that the quality of, you know, where it's sourced and how it's been reared and how it's been looked after has a huge impact on how that's going to impact our health when we eat it.
Right. I always think it's rather tragic that in the case of fish, where it's the one sort of mainstream product which inherently should be organic just because they're putting it out of the sea, but of course they've got to the stage of the sea now where that's not really true anymore, is it?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's really sad. It is really sad and really unfortunate. And that's one of the more difficult ones as well, because there's an omega-3 or two types of omega-3 oil in fish oil that's very hard to get hold of from other whole food sources. We can make those forms of omega-3 oil from other forms of omega-3 and things like nuts and seeds, but with great difficulty. We're not very efficient at it. But particularly EPA comes ready-made in fish. And it's so crucial to keep levels of inflammation low. And it's just one of those really fundamental nutrients for good health. Mm. And the less we're able to get hold of good quality fish, and alongside that means that we're probably less able to get hold of good quality fish oil as well, the harder it is for us as a species to really stay healthy. There are vegan supplements now, because you do get the same type of omega-3 oil in algae. You'd have to eat an awful lot of algae in order to get enough, but you can get concentrated vegan supplements now of EPA and DHA, which makes that a lot easier. But in terms of eating a whole food diet and on health fronts, that is a real concern. It's a really ironic one. If you take the kind of the moral and ethical decision as to whether or not you want to eat fish and put that to one side and purely look at the health thing, I think we've really scuppered ourselves on that one.
Yeah. So we seem to be left with a choice between, well, you have it out the sea, which is only good in theory, or you have organic farmed, where I think it's generally accepted that farmed is not nearly as good as wild, but it's organic, though, so it's difficult to choose these things.
Yeah, and then you've got to look at where the organic farm is, and is how clean is the river or lake or sea or wherever that you're getting it from there. If you are getting farmed fish, I would say definitely organic, because I think a lot of the non-organic farmed fish is fed with GM feed. But yes, if I'm sourcing wild fish, I'm very closely looking at where it's come from in the world, but there's nowhere that's completely pure and clean anymore, sadly.
You were saying there's not particularly any studies to really show that, say, organic grass-fed meat is better than standard, but I assume that intuitively, in line with your policy of buying organic food generally, that's what you would go for if you were a meat eater.
Yeah, if you're buying pasture-fed meat anyway, the nutrient balance is going to be usually a lot better. Anyway, so for example, again, with the omega-3 and omega-6 oil, there will be small amounts of EPA and DHA in meat. There will also be some omega-6 oils and some other fats and oils as well. But the balance between omega-6 and omega-3 is quite an interesting one. And it seems to be the case that we are more easily able to calm down inflammation if we have more of the EPA. And pasture-fed meat seems to have a much more conducive balance for that, whereas grain-fed meat will have way, way, way too much omega-6 in it. And in terms of nutrient contents generally, an animal that's going to have grazed on a huge variety of different grasses and flowers and seeds and so on, is just going to have a lot more nutrition in its being, in itself, than something that's been fed a much more simplified diet.
Right.
So that makes an awful lot of sense.
Yeah.
At the end of the world, we don't live in an oxygen bubble. We are going to come across things. We can make an effort to reduce them. We can. But I think what's really key is supporting the liver and making sure it's got as many nutrients as possible to make the enzymes and other substances it needs to process those toxins. So when I'm looking at food, I'm not just looking at which is the least toxic. I'm also looking at which is going to be the most nourishing and most nutritious for me.
Mm. Well, that's a very important point. Right. Thank you. Okay, so can we have a look at our homes now? Many of them have become places where we're kind of bathing in a toxic soup exuding from our furnishings, our clothing, electronic devices, personal care products, cleaning products. Again, it's a huge topic, but maybe you could give us some of the headlines and your key pieces of advice for stuff around your home.
Yeah, well, it's like you say, it is everywhere. It's coming out of the walls and the paints and the wallpapers. It's coming out of the carpets, the soft furnishings. So very few of us are in a position where we can just go out and completely refurb our houses with all natural everything.
Right.
But as you go along, if anything needs replacing, that's the kind of thing that we can all start to think about now. So we're just buying a new mattress, for example, and I've been struck by how many more affordable natural options there are around now than there were 10 years ago. A lot of people are getting clued up to how that's what people are looking for. So there is more availability now. So it's worth checking out to see if there are more natural options within your price range that you can go for.
Mm-hmm.
On the smaller scale, using things like washing up liquid, laundry liquid, shower gels, shampoos, so on. And there's quite a lot of different companies now making those. And you can also make your own pretty easily. You can clean things with white vinegar and bicarb and lemon juice, things like that, just as effectively as with things that you could buy from the supermarket, from your health food shop. And that works out ridiculously cheap as well. It's very easy to go online and find recipes on what's good to use where. And I'm always astonished at how well these things work. So you don't have to rely on the very well marketed plastic coated brands out there. You can actually make things yourself that will clean your house, that will clean you, that will keep you and your house smelling fresh and lovely, that are very affordable and very easy to do. People get really overwhelmed by making lots of different changes as well. So a New Year's tip then, rather than make 50 New Year's resolutions about how I'm going to do this, that, and end up getting overwhelmed and not doing any of them, maybe choose like one thing a month that you're going to change, one thing a month that you're going to introduce or try. And by the time the next month comes around, that's just part of what you do. You don't think about it anymore. So introducing one new thing is going to be a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very interesting. You've got what you're saying about cleaning products. It always strikes me, you go into the supermarket and there's 100 yards of different coloured liquids for every possible nook and cranny of your house, all of them essential to have exactly the right one. And I think to myself, well, I bet most of these are the same thing with different colourings in them. I think it's notable that a few things, as you said, will do a lot of cleaning jobs, in fact.
Yeah, bicarbonate. Just get some bicarbonate of soda and some white vinegar or some lemons, and you're away with most things. Actually, and walking down those aisles in the supermarket makes me sneeze, makes my eyes sore, and I'm not particularly sensitive or allergic to things like that, that that concentration of them in one aisle just tells me everything I need to know.
Right.
And it's just so easy to avoid.
Okay, and let's have a little talk about devices now, because our whole everybody's home is full of at least a good few mobile phones, apart from all the electric devices. So there's quite a bunch of EMFs, one kind and another, in our homes. How important do you think this is as a pollutant? It's a different kind of a pollutant, obviously a different. It's not a physical toxin, but it is, from the body's point of view, it's another form of attack, if you like.
Absolutely, and our bodies respond to any kind of attack, threat, stress in a similar way. They tense up, they hold on to stuff, they stop the flow of things, and the most important thing our body needs is for things to be able to flow. There is a lot more EMF pollution than ever before. It's not getting any less, it's getting higher and higher. People are becoming much more reliant on devices. In some respects, it does make aspects of life a bit easier and less stressful, but in other aspects, it really does the opposite. The very least that I would say that people could do to have a really good impact there is to turn everything off at night. Turn your Wi-Fi off at night. It's whilst you are asleep that it's most important that you're kept as clear from these as possible.
Right.
So that's our recovery time. That's when we need to reset. And it's very difficult to reset and recover when we've got that constant background buzz and the influence of Wi-Fi in particular on what's going on really at cellular level in our bodies. So it's usually quite easy to turn Wi-Fi off at night and then just turn it back on in the morning, and unplug things at night as well. I switch my mobile to airplane mode and switch it off at night time. I don't have things plugged in unless they need to be plugged in, you know, like the fridge, freezer and so on.
Right.
I try and keep the electricity in my bedroom to an absolute minimum. It's another thing that can just become a really easy habit. It's just something that we do now. We've been doing it for so many years, it's second nature. That thing about sleeping with your mobile in your bedroom and using it as an alarm, I'd suggest to get a separate alarm clock. But if you have to use your mobile, switch it to airplane mode. The alarm will still work, and put it on the other side of your room, not by your head.
Okay, and what I do with my router, by the way, with the broadband, is actually just go on those cheap timer plugs, so it switches itself off every night, saves me remembering.
That's clever. Excellent. And that's also a really good thing for people who find themselves just thinking, oh, I'm just going to check social media before I go to bed, and then too stimulated to go to sleep anyway, and then end up stuck on social media for goodness knows how long. If the Wi-Fi just automatically turns off at a certain time, then there you go, shutdown time.
Okay, so moving outside the home now into the environment. So many of the toxins that are out there are very dangerous, as government figures show, you know, deaths from air pollution, for example. Some of these things can be pretty hard to avoid, but can you identify the biggest and most dangerous sources of environmental toxins, and what, if anything, we can do to reduce our exposure?
Well, one thing that's been highlighted in the last year or two has been living near main roads, living near busy roads. So not always an easy thing to rectify, but if you do live near a busy road and you're thinking of moving anyway, then that really should be one of the criteria to think about. That's really a main thing. Or even if you're not living near a busy road, but for whatever reason your journey to work takes you along a busy road, is there another route that you can take to avoid that? And then thinking about, again, these are quite big, expensive changes, so they're not things that everybody can just go out and do. But maybe the next time you change your car, have a look into electric cars. Those kinds of choices can make such a difference. But again, day to day, the smaller things, you know, just think about where you're spending most of your time. Can you get out to the countryside once or twice a week and just hang out with some trees and breathe in some proper oxygen every now and again? Mm. So those kind of things we can make more of an impact on. Or even if you can't get out to the countryside, most people have a park or an open space near them with some trees, and they're all good places to hang out on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked about EMFs stressing the systems of the body. Other things that are similar in the environment are noise. You know, it goes along with the same road that might be polluting. You might also be keeping you up at night. And light pollution as well. These are both things that more and more people are subject to.
Yeah, completely. So we can go to bed with things like earplugs and eye masks and blackout blinds and things like that to really help with those things.
Yeah.
Also, there's been some research into how much time we spend outdoors at different times of the day as well. There's been some people looking at going outside in the morning and getting natural light in the morning actually helps your circadian rhythms throughout the whole day. So it's not just making sure that you're getting nighttime at night, it's making sure that you're getting daylight through much of the day as possible. And your circadian rhythm, so your natural day-night cycle in your body, governs so much. It doesn't just govern your sleep cycles and patterns, but also things like the patterns of your stress hormone cortisol. And the patterns of your stress hormone cortisol also has an influence on how well you reduce inflammation in your body. And inflammation it really underpins cancer and every single chronic disease you can think of. So, yes. That's really crucial. So not just avoiding light pollution, but making sure you're getting daylight during daytime is very important.
So the worst case scenario is the one where you don't really sleep in the dark properly, and then you get up and go straight off into an office only with strip lighting and no daylight.
Absolutely. Yeah, it can't be much better than shift working.
Right,
actually.
Shift work is of course the worst. Yeah. Okay. So, and the other thing, of course, that comes to mind is that, well, EMFs can happen big time out in the environment. You could be working every day, for example, underneath a mast for a mobile phone company or something.
Yeah. When I've worked with people whose health has been drastically affected by EMFs and EMF sensitivity, the thing that seems to make the biggest positive impact on their health is adrenal support. It seems to be the adrenals that get a real battering. Mm. There's a lot that can be done there to support your adrenals. And we're back to making sure you're well hydrated is just fundamental to everything. People automatically think of B vitamins when it comes to adrenals. And yes, some of them are really crucial, so especially vitamin B5 and vitamin B6, but also B1 and a couple of the other B vitamins too. Magnesium is really, really very massively important for this, and it's one that gets depleted really easily with stress. And magnesium is one that's really depleted in the soil these days, so it's not actually coming through to the food that we eat as much as it used to. So I would look at gradually including magnesium supplementation, good quality magnesium supplementation as well there. And maybe zinc too. There are various other things that might need to be looked at, but they would be the main ones to begin with, I would say.
Okay. So a message which keeps cropping up here is that you may not be able to do anything about the toxin, whatever it is, or the form of pollution, but you can always do something about supporting your body and dealing with it in a better way.
Yeah, you can always do that.
And
tip the balance, really, and we need to be doing as much as we can to tip the balance as much as possible. So it's not just avoiding these things, it's trying to find foods that are going to help us manage the situation that we're in. So I've mentioned a few B vitamins for the adrenals. There's also that the liver is completely dependent on also B5 and B6, also B2, B3, B12, folate, which is a type of B vitamin. It's absolutely 100% reliant on those to carry out what we call phase one and phase two detoxification processes. And not just the B vitamins, vitamin C as well, and magnesium and various other minerals and sulfates and choline. There's a whole arsenal of nutrients and plant nutrients that are really very important to the liver in order for it to be able to do that natural detoxification that we hear so much about.
So the worse your environment is, the more attention you need to give to this, probably.
Yes, yeah. And coming back to the theme of detoxing, a lot of people think a detox is about fasting. And fasting can be really helpful, whether it's a water fast or a juice fast or whatever, or an intermittent fasting. It does do very well for a lot of people, that job of sending the cells a message that they need to go into rest and repair mode.
Right.
There's all sorts of emerging science around that, which is absolutely brilliant. And putting that kind of stress on the body can kickstart its interaction. But putting that kind of stress on the body for some people can actually be too much. So it's really feeling one's way through this, engaging what's appropriate. And if you want to embark on some kind of fast, rather than thinking, right, I'm going to do this fast, I'm going to do it to the bitter end, however it feels,
right. Really
engaging with it and reassessing every day, okay, well, how does this feel today? Does this still feel like it's doing me good? Does this still feel like it's nourishing me? Or do I just feel depleted now? So really having that attitude to it. And there's also the other approach of, okay, well, if you really want to support your body's detoxification processes, then you need to make sure it has the nutrients that it needs for the liver's phase one and phase two detoxification processes. And if by fasting you're making yourself deficient in those, then it's going to be quite hard for your liver to do its job.
Yes.
I'm not saying that one way is better or one way is right and one way is wrong. It's just really understanding that detoxification isn't a simple thing. It's not a simple case of, like, I'm going to fast and that's going to do it. Or I'm going to eat loads of greens and that's going to do it. Different people will require a slightly different approach depending on what their body needs right now. For some people, their bodies might really relish and thrive in that bit of space that a fast gives. But for other people, it might just be too depleting, too stressful initially to blood sugar. And there might be a more gentle approach and a more nourishing approach required that provides what the body needs to make its phase one and phase two enzymes.
Okay. So just coming towards the end, I want to sort of step back and look. We talked about a whole smorgasbord of toxins. If you're starting to address, say, you know, something you've never thought about before, the whole scenario is quite overwhelming, really. So you kind of need a bit of prioritisation. What are the most important things to be thinking about? I'm just interested to know what you might recommend to somebody to start out thinking about it. Just say they hadn't considered toxins in their life in any way before.
Yeah, so I would say to think about eating organic where possible. I would say to look at water intake, both quality and quantity. Bearing in mind, actually, I do come across quite a lot of people that are drinking way too much water, as well as people
really?
Who don't drink enough. Yeah. So really have a look at quantity and quality of water. to have a look at vegetable intake, most people will say to me, oh yes, I eat plenty of vegetables. And then when I ask them for specifics, it's not actually that much. Right. So if you could look at maybe see how it feels to have about 50%, so half your plate vegetables, see how that feels. Mm-hmm. And a good variety of vegetables as well, but making sure there's something green and leafy with every meal. And the reason I say that is because if you look through the list of nutrients your liver needs to do its job, the green and leafy vegetables, things like cabbage and watercress, rocket, kale, spinach, those kinds of things, they come up again and again and again and again and again. Same thing for adrenal support. You do need to have a little bit of protein regularly through your diet for various reasons. So it's not about massively reducing protein, as some diets suggest. So you do need proteins to make liver detoxification enzymes, for example, but maybe not as much as a lot of people are currently including in the diet. Same with carbohydrates. Maybe experiment with how many carbohydrates you're having in your diet and what feels more supportive to your digestion and your energy levels. But generally, my top three would be quality of food, quantity and quality of water, and upping the vegetable intake. Mm. If you want to increase your vegetable intake quite substantially, and you but the fiber is really messing up your digestion, because too much fiber can be just as difficult for your digestion as not enough fiber, then that's where vegetable juices come in. And things like vegetable broths can be really helpful too, if the vegetable juices are too cold and too raw at this time of year. Fruit juices, well, they're mostly, you're concentrating the sugar in fruit. You are getting some of the nutrients with it as well. But generally, I'd say with fruit, it's better to have one or two pieces of whole fruit a day rather than lots of sugar concentrated juice. But with vegetable juicing, it can be a really nice thing to add in. But with all things, it's doing it gradually and it's doing it mindfully, and feeling your way through any detox program. So you can read X amount of books, listen to any amount of people like myself giving you advice. You can take the advice, do it word for word. If it feels wrong, don't do it, because your body knows so much more about what it wants than I ever will or any books will ever be able to tell you. So the key thing with any nutritional program, whether it's a detox program or anything else, is to really listen to and really trust your body rather than to push it into a corner that's not right for it right now.
Okay, good. So you're very firmly focused on what you're putting in your mouth is the place you start in all mm-hmm. that advice. So that's simple and clear. Great. Okay, so just briefly, you talked a little bit about actual detoxes. So these are things you're actively doing to take toxins out of your body. This is something that can go a lot further, of course, in terms of the fact that some pollutants are very persistent. They're difficult to get rid of and they need expert help. Do you want to say just a little bit about that and how it relates to having cancer?
Yeah. So there are various heavy metals that can be problematic. But again, magnesium can be really helpful for a lot of them. Magnesium's one thing that I end up supplementing with most people, because most people seem to be in need of a lot more magnesium in their lives and more than we can get from food. Our bodies are really complicated. So there's no simple quick fix for getting more problematic, more persistent chemicals out of the body. And in fact, even if you supply your liver with all the nutrients it needs, it's still only helping your liver to convert toxins into something else. Actually, that's not how you can get them out of your body. There's a whole process of elimination as well as detoxification. So once your liver has processed toxins, it's the fat-soluble toxins your liver processes. Once it's done all of the work processing those, they're still in your body. So we still have this process of trying to get them out. And largely what happens there is your body makes bile. Your liver makes bile, it sends it to your gallbladder releases it every time you eat something fatty into your intestines, and then the toxins come out along with that, and then they go through your intestines, and when you go for a poo, essentially, that's when those processed fat-soluble toxins are coming out of your body. That process can also be assisted. That's where things like coffee enemas and other enemas can come in through assisting that process, because the caffeine in coffee can help stimulate more bile release from your liver into your gallbladder, and obviously the process of doing an enema helps to release in that way as well. Any kind of bitter foods will stimulate that bile secretion, so down the line coffee will do it as well. Things like artichokes, the really dark green leafy vegetables, so they will all really help with that bile secretion, so help that process of elimination as well as just the detoxification. I was taught very well to match the level of detox with what the body can do to eliminate and let go. Because if you do a lot of work to really push a big detoxification, but your body can't let go of that much or can't eliminate that much all in one go, then it's just going to overload the liver and lymph even more. And there's only so much energy that a body can have to deal with that. So it can be really tempting, especially for somebody with cancer, it can be really tempting to just do a major full-on detox process that then ends up overloading them and just being too much for their body to cope with, especially in the cold, damp climate of the United Kingdom, unfortunately. As I said at the beginning, for some people this can work beautifully, but for a lot of people we need to be a lot more gentle and a lot more mindful. And rather than be driven by fear on this, to just do everything quickly and throw everything at this quickly, to just breathe a little bit and take a little bit more time over healing ourselves. I think that's probably the best advice I can give. Okay. That sense that we've got to do it all now sometimes comes from a real underlying, yes, that's what we need to do, but often it comes from fear, and that fear is going to do the opposite of healing, if that makes sense.
It does. Okay, that's very helpful. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time, but it's absolutely clear from everything you said today that the message, I think, for the public is that if we aren't pretty smart about the choices we make in life, over time we'll almost certainly build up some dangerous levels of toxins that are bound to threaten our health. So it's a kind of sobering situation, and one I'd say, well, it's probably still getting worse overall. I think it's really important that the level of awareness in the public about the situation goes up, and so I'm very grateful to people like you who are actually spreading the word.
Yeah, it's a lovely thing to be able to do this. It's something that I never really dreamt that I would be in this position one day, talking about these kinds of things and getting so immersed in this kind of subject.
Right.
It kind of started with me having cancer 20 years ago. Stimulates you to research this area more. But yeah, I think it is a really important message to get out there. I think it's a message people are waking up. People are sticking their heads in the sand less and thinking, okay, we do have to start being proactive about things.
Yeah.
What can we do? So I think this is a really good time to get these kinds of messages out to wider people, not just people who are already in the alternative and complementary healthcare world, but actually to the wider public as well.
Yeah, very important. All right, thanks so much, Kirsten.
Welcome, lovely to speak to you, Robin. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Look on the Yes to Life website for links to material related to today's show. That's yestolife.org.uk. Click the show logo that's on the homepage. Thanks very much for listening today. Do please join me again next week for another Yes to Life show. Goodbye.